Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 28 of the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally anywhere. And for once, we're pretty much on time. I think people should appreciate that.
And I mean, we're still late, but they have to get over it anyway.
Slightly, ever so slightly. But we've got Abdul T.S., Devendra P., Vignesh Ram, Arnav Jindal, Arco, and Swaminathan Ramesh Sashi in the comments. So hello to you guys as well. And how's it going, Jared? Do you miss me yet?
Have you left?
Of course I have. Don't you recognize the background?
Because we are, you know, we do this all the time. I have a closer relationship with you than any of my other friends because we're booked in to talk to each other.
Absolutely. And I do have an eek-sized hole or void in my life in which I'm dying for someone to ask me to ask them a cricketing question.
Oh, do you want a good Ezekiel thing? So we will be doing a project with Eek soon, which probably after the World Cup we'll look at this. But Ezekiel made his top score in a cricket game. He made 22, not out. Well, he was compulsory retirement at 20. So he made 22. His following two games, he made 0 runs, 2 ducks from 1 ball. He's got a golden duck in one game and then diamond duck in the next. And anyone else would be upset. But because he knows what a diamond duck is, he was quite excited to, at a young age, have completed the sets of golden and diamond.
I'm also taking a bit of credit for the unbeaten 22 because I rolled my arm over a lot to help him practice.
No credit for the golden and diamond duck.
Yeah, well, let's see. I mean, I even like taught him a bit of left arm finger spin, but I don't think he caught on to any of that. Anyway.
We'll talk about that off air. But yeah, he's been bowling a bit of that as well.
Let's come to the on-field cricket discourse. And interestingly enough, we only have one series to talk about in this particular episode of Overthrows. India is playing in Sri Lanka. They're there for a limited overs tour. And the last time we spoke of the series, India were leading 2-0 in the T20I series. This week, however, Jared, both India and Sri Lanka woke up and chose violence against gamblers. Two tired games, one which resulted in an Indian victory via super over. And then Sri Lanka won an ODI versus India for the first time in 3 years. How about that?
So I didn't really watch all that much of them. But obviously, the 9 or 12 different WhatsApp groups I'm in, you can imagine, we're going absolutely nuts for both of them. And I remember the second one. I'm trying to think. I was doing something. And I had been flicking. Maybe the Olympics was on at the same time. And I was flicking between the two. And then what did India need? About 28 runs with 2 wickets in hand? Does that sound right?
Something
and I thought
like
to
that.
Myself, well, there's no way they're going to get there. And then I got to, I think it might have been a cricket training or you know, a tennis lesson or whatever it was that I was going to. One of the dads was like, can you believe the score was tied? And I went, what? And then not only was it tied, it was like a proper, like, first class tie. Like, it was bowled out, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy, ridiculous thing. So, yeah, good luck to anyone, you know, betting on those games, trading on those games, or even just a fans of either of those two sides. I can't imagine we've ever seen anything like, I know it's two different formats, so it's a bit tricky to look up, but I can't imagine we've ever seen too many times where we've seen back-to-back ties.
It was India versus New Zealand, wasn't it, a couple of years back, or maybe more than that, that the last instance that I can remember. But yeah, it's been fascinating. We didn't expect it. We thought India would steamroll Sri Lanka, so it's good in that regard. Let's go chronologically. I want to talk about the first T20I. So Sri Lanka had restricted India to a first inning score of 137, courtesy of 3 for 28 by Mahesh Teekshana and 2 for 29 by Wanindu Hasaranga. In response, Sri Lanka were coasting. They were almost through and required 9 runs in the last 2 overs. With 6 wickets in hand, they could only get 8 of those runs and they lost 4 wickets. And those 2 overs were bowled by Rinku, who got 2 for 3, and the captain himself, Sky, who got 2 for 5. So make it make sense for me.
Yeah, it's one of the more interesting bowling systems because you look, they had Khalil Ahmed, Muhammad Siraj, and Bishnoi, and everyone else is either a part-timer or a low-end all-rounder or a never bowler, right? Like, you know, the fact that they got 4 overs out of Riyan Parag is... I think I said on a recent podcast, we might have seen his best bowling of his career in a previous game. If he can do this consistently, which I doubt, but at least if he can do it consistently on wickets like this, that's a huge thing for them. Hmm. But the fact that they ended up with Rinku and Sky and got over, well, not got over line, but made the game go to the super over in the first place is one of the more ridiculous games of cricket you will ever see. But it's also, it's kind of interesting from India, because India, they made the decision based on the conditions, right?
Hmm.
It, you know, like, that's the sort of thing you would expect someone like MS Dhoni or Aaron Finch to do, you know, maybe a Brendan McCullum. Really interesting that this new Indian outlook with, you know, what is, we all assume maybe a makeshift captain or a, you know, a part-time captain. That's a big call to make, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know the amount of times, you know, we do these games with Cricket 8 where we do the watch-alongs and, you know, it'd be me and Rob or me and Rob and Jake or whoever's on with us. And we'll be sitting there going, the best thing to do in this game right at the moment would be to, you know, use your part-time spinner. And they don't do it. India doubled down on it, right?
Yeah.
And it does show you that, you know, in certain situations that that makes more sense. But it's not an easy decision for someone who's not like an experienced long-term captain, especially the Indian team, right?
Yeah.
Like if he does that and they get absolutely hammered, yeah, that I think he's going to be, I think it's a really, really interesting move.
Yeah, I mean, we could do an episode of Stupid Cricket on that T20I alone. And clearly Sky is wilding as captain of this T20 side, which I quite like. And he also tossed the ball to Washington Sundar during the Super Over. He, of course, was player of the match in this T20I. India, you know, were reeling. And at that point, he scored 25 crucial runs. Then he took 2 for 23 in his four overs. And when he was tossed the ball in the super over, he took 2 for 2, essentially killing off the game. In addition to this, he also took 3 for 30 in an ODI later. And ever since India have started their post-T20 World Cup journey, we've seen Washington Sundar get pretty much every game. And he's really made the most of these consistent opportunities. And you would love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone knows I'm a huge fan of his. I don't think this tells us as much about him as perhaps some people will believe. And the reason I would say that is because he's in a position where, what's the best way of putting it? Because of where he is, at the, you know, because he's bowling in Asia and we've just seen Rinku bowl well and Sky bowl well and Riyan Parag bowl well, I want to see what Washington Sundar does all around the world. And I also want to see what he does as the fourth bowler occasionally or, you know, the certain, the nailed on fifth bowler, however they look at it from that point of view. But I think his big issue is, and I've seen this with really talented players before, they don't always quite believe that they're there. And he was pushed ahead of when he was ready quite a few times in his career. And I think he's just getting to a point now where he's starting to work out, actually, I am of this level.
Hmm.
And he's not a regular IPL player, right?
Yeah. He barely played in this previous season, right? Maybe a game or two tops.
And I've been saying for a very long time that he's been misused in the IPL. Hmm. India realized how important he is. So he's probably playing for more IPL games and more Indian games at the same time, which is a very weird position to be in. Like Riyan Parag's not really in that kind of position, right? And Rinku and Sky are not in that position. Washington is in that position. So it's a very, very interesting place to be as a cricketer. I've always been a big fan. I think he's just a young all-rounder and it just takes a little bit longer because you're not that great with batting and you're not that great with bowling. And sometimes you end up more of an Ashton Agar, which is still a really important player to have around World Cup times. And, you know, the really good players end up being, you know, Jadeja and Jason Holder, right? Mm. That's the other end of that spectrum, or that Vittori even.
Mm. I mean, the more games he plays, the more he will develop. And Washington has been playing with more freedom. Let's just say that. Let's move on to Sri Lanka, because there is a spinner that I want to talk about, right? Jeffrey Vandersay, 34 years of age now. I saw him for the first time a long time ago, and he was the performer of the week, I would say. He was Hasaranga's replacement in the second ODI and took career best figures of 6 for 33 bowling leg spin to India in Colombo. India, by the way, are one of the best teams playing spin, so that is a feat and a half. And he helped Sri Lanka defeat India in an ODI for the first time in 3 years. So Jeffrey Vander said it and India listened. Spectacular effort.
Are you a Seinfeld fan?
No, I've never watched Seinfeld. I was more of a Friends guy.
There's a thing in Seinfeld about George comes up with a fake business and it's called Vanderlei Industries.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you go, I mean, they don't exist anymore, but the old cricket with balls things, we used to call him Jeffrey Vandalay Industries. Because I think that's how long ago that he, you know, he first came onto the scene. When was his first game? 2009?
Somewhere around that time, because I remember him playing one of those games versus Pakistan when Sri Lanka would always play Pakistan. That's where this from. Yeah. You can check.
And so I'm just trying to have a look back. Oh, it says 2000. No, it's 2015. So it's a little bit later. Maybe I did it on Polite Inquiries anyway. I know I did it somewhere. Look, I remember him coming through at that stage and he's obviously got talent. And I wonder if he would have come back and had a good last, three or four years if it just wasn't for Hasaranga. You go through his record in List A cricket and T20 cricket, and he's been fine. Now, a lot of that isn't the top level T20 cricket because Sri Lanka hasn't had a lot of that. But he never gets hit in domestic cricket. And a couple of times, I remember putting together a list for a franchise. I can't remember who it was, but some franchise contacted me and said, can you put together a list of the best 12 leg spinners in the world? You know, that are free at the moment. And I had him on my list and they were like, we hadn't even thought of him. And I was like, look, every time I've seen him bowl, he, you know, he's kind of like an Ish Sodhi version, like from Sri Lanka, where you go, he's not quite always bang on international quality, but his best ball is international quality.
Yeah, and it's interesting now whether or not he retains his spot for the third ODI, which, by the way, Sri Lanka have an unassailable 1-0 lead, so they can't lose this series, but they would want to win it because they are playing at home and they are playing India. And Hasaranga, who sat this one out, he took 3 wickets in the third T20I and the first ODI, right? So he's got 6 wickets in 2 games this past week. And Van der Say is another leg spinner, so I'm not sure how they would fit him in if Hasaranga is fit. Because they are keen on playing Will Alagi, then they also have Teek Shana. So it's a bit of a conundrum.
It's a conundrum, but also it means that you have more squad depth again, right? And they are going to lose players to injury at times and, you know, all sorts of things going ahead. So I've got no issue. I've got no issue with that. It's a better place to be in than not having a backup. Also, Hasaranga is wildly, he gets injured a lot. He's also got other issues and is in and out of the side. And I currently don't know where he's retired and where he hasn't retired from and, you know, all those sorts of things. So I think from that perspective, he is what he is, right? Like you keep him as your backup and you have him. Maybe sometimes in certain situations, they go up against a team with a bunch of right-handers or a bunch of players who don't handle leg spin very well. You chuck them both out there. That's a better situation to be than not having both of them.
Yeah, I suppose so. Plus, Sri Lanka have made some interesting calls with respect to their batting order as well. I saw Kamindu Mendis bat at 8 in one of the ODIs. So I would love to pick Sanath's brain on what that is all about. Also, something interesting brought up by Varun in the chat. He said that the super over, that wasn't to be. Clarity has emerged that the umpires had failed to apply the ICC playing conditions, which require a super over to decide a tied ODI. And the first ODI remained a tie.
Yeah, I thought that was weird at the time. And my first instinct was they do play a super over. And then when they didn't, I thought, oh, obviously I've got that wrong. Because why would I expect the people at the ground to have got that wrong? And I thought maybe the conditions had changed or, you know, something had happened. But it doesn't appear like that. Also, just on, there's another comment in there by Shuria Patak who says, Rian Parag has an excellent List A record. He has a List A record. It's not excellent. It's, you know, he doesn't bowl all that many overs. He averages over 30 with the ball. His economy rate's fine for what I expect of that kind of bowler. But we have seen him a lot at the top level really struggle with the ball, right? Really, really struggle with the ball, specifically in the IPL, in conditions that would favour him. So if he's struggling against good players of spin in Indian conditions, you wonder what use his bowling is in other conditions. Having
especially
said that,
in Senna, right? Like, is he going to get an over it on?
Sri Lanka is the place you would expect him to do the best, right?
Yeah.
But can you get, if he's going to, I mean, we're talking about him being a potential fifth bowler. That means he's going to have to bowl in England, New Zealand, Australia, and South Africa, right? Otherwise, what you're really talking about is a sixth bowler or even a seventh bowler who can bowl in certain situations, kind of like a Sehwag type player, which is fine. That's also a very handy player to have, but it's a very different kind of player. Sometimes you just need to take the slips out and bowl defensively. And you also need to be careful with your computer's defense as well. If you need a VPN, go NordVPN.com /Kimber to get a 2-year contract with a discount, plus 4 extra months and gifts in some markets. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. So put in some dot balls and turn them into maidens via nordvpn.com/Kimber.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, another Sri Lankan spinner who has done really well in the ODI series. He took 3 wickets in each of those 2 games. And fun story, he's a part-timer and also happens to be the newly appointed captain of Sri Lanka's ODI side. Charithasa Lanka, Jared, now has 11 ODI wickets in total. And 10 of them have come against India, with 6 in just this series. And he averages less than 10 runs per wicket against them. So, I mean, in the world of weird stats, that's got to be right up there in contemporary cricket.
Yeah. I think he's another one who in the right conditions can bowl well. And if you think, this is why when we talk about part-timers and everything else, he's got a really good record against India. I wonder how many of those matches are in India or Sri Lanka, which is probably what suits his bowling best, right? Do you know, like at a certain point, that's probably what you expect. I think he's okay. I mean, I think he's a better bowler at the moment than Riyan Parag is, right? I think if you had the choice between those two, you would definitely give him the ball first. But yeah, it's a bit odd to see that kind of a record.
Yeah, I mean, he's got...
Did he make a golden duck in one of the games too?
Batted well at all. In fact, his career ODI average is, I think, 23 or 22, somewhere around there with the ball. I think that's all because of India, because he's only taken 1 more wicket versus South Africa in the rest of his career. So it's a very interesting breakdown.
He's played in 61 matches and bowled in 16 of them, which is, I mean, that's not even part-time.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It has 11 wickets. So it's very lopsided. And then, yeah, I mean, his ODI batting record is averaging, 42.5 at a strike rate of 88. You take that, 300s from that. That's not far off, a very good anchor record. Maybe you want either the average or the strike rate to be slightly higher, but it's a nice combination. He's getting into his peak as well. So I would hope in the next little while we see the best of Sri Lanka. The problem is, though, again, they're giving because the constant rotation of everyone being captain in Sri Lanka means that every time they get a good player who finds some form, they throw them to captaincy. I'm not saying that captaincy always ruins everyone, but it's another thing that these guys have to deal with just as they're hitting their peaks.
Yeah. I mean, he started off fine as far as captaincy is concerned, because he won't be losing this series versus India. So that's a start. But in the batting department, I mean, he didn't perform particularly well. And no one did, if you think about it. Like in this ODI series, Partham Nisanka scored 56 for Sri Lanka in the first ODI, bagged a duck in the second. So hot and cold. And then their best batter, honestly, has been Dunith Wilalage. He was unbeaten on 67 of 65 balls in the first ODI. And then he scored a crucial 39 runs in the second as well. His batting is one of the main reasons why Sri Lanka 1-0 up after 2 games. And his stock as an all-rounder in limited overs cricket is rising, because we knew he could bowl and we'd seen glimpses of brilliance with the bat. But this is quite impressive.
Yeah, I think there's some really good signs there. I think they've played some really good cricket and this is all part of it, right? Like, the thing is that there is some talent there. It feels a little bit like West Indies and Zimbabwe at times with Sri Lanka, where you're just like, yeah, there's talent, there's hope. And then when you actually put it under any kind of pressure, it seems to fall apart again. There's pieces within that structure that can certainly make something. An announcement for people on YouTube, just to let you know, you can't put statements that are that can be sued, defamatory statements, into the comments. We have to delete them, and also you can get sued for that. So for instance, if you say a player looks like they're on drugs, performance enhancing drugs, we have to delete that and ban you from this account. So just letting everyone know in case that just happened.
Yeah, remember that, guys. Also, let's go back to India for a bit. Let's talk about Rohit Sharma 3.0. He smashed 58 of 47 in the first ODI and then 64 of 44 in the second. And in that knock, he brought up his 50 in 29 deliveries. He's continuing to bat in the same belligerent manner up top. And he has now broken the record for most 50-plus scores by an opener in international cricket across all formats. 121 to be precise. That's fantastic.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories is really older players suddenly just playing different. Do you remember, it's probably before your time, but when Australia A played, when they played in the quadrangular series with Zimbabwe and England, I was really excited as a young fan because you'd kind of seen David Boone and, you know, Mark Taylor and all those other players play. Now you're seeing all these young players come in and, like, you know, it was really nerding out, and then they were really good. And we've seen it when, like, India won the BGT with their backup players. It's more exciting when that sort of stuff happens. But the other thing that's really exciting is when an older player like Faf du Plessis, who never really took T20 cricket all that seriously, suddenly did and became a beast at it, right? And watching Rohit become the player that, do you remember when he had that first big year in the IPL, Viv Richards chose him as the heir apparent, right? Like, literally said, that's the guy I'm backing. I love watching Rohit Sharma bat. We haven't really seen that Rohit consistently throughout his career. He does have the ability to score at well over a run a ball while averaging huge amounts. And it feels like at the end of his career, he's finally off the chain. After all those years of playing in the IPL with like averaging 29 and 32 with a strike rate of like 128 or 135, it's just like, no, this is the Rohit that we've all been waiting for. And it's spectacular.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing to watch. And I personally have loved his transformation originally as a middle order bat to a run accumulator opener who scored three double hundreds and all of those other hundreds as well, right?
And now he did that under a team plan, right?
Yes. Like,
that was him and Shikhar made a ton of runs, and it was clearly a plan of what they were trying to do. Be none for 45 after 10, get to this score, and it won them a lot of games as well.
Yes.
It's just that England exploded that, and obviously, you know, Australia and South Africa and India are now playing in a very different mode and everything else. But Rohit was playing to the plan of Indian cricket. It's the same as when you look at Andrew Symon's career, and you're just like, oh, imagine what he could have done in one day cricket if we'd actually let him be Andrew Symon's. And Fraser McGurk will probably only ever be Fraser McGurk, right? Like, Australia spent a decade trying to stop Glenn Maxwell from being Glenn Maxwell, right?
Yeah.
And now they kind of realize, no, that's what he does, and we're going to back that around him. And that's the better, trying to, when you have talents like Rohit and Symons and Maxwell, the chances are the next player behind them isn't going to be able to do that. And you, what the next player might be able to do behind them is be an anchor.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's very hard to find just a person who can destruct on that level. And it's great at this, you know, late stage in his career, we're seeing that. Also, it's a bit like Jimmy Anderson. Do you remember when Bazball came in and Jimmy Anderson was like, this is the most fun I've ever had, right?
Yeah.
I reckon if I'm Rohit Sharma right now, I'm like, this looks fun.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, like, I remember playing according to a game plan once again, right? And he has literally been at the forefront of this evolution within Indian cricket, or at least limited overs cricket in India, where they are now going for the jugular and not just knocking it around. They're going for the kill, and they've won a trophy.
Yeah. So that backs him up even more, right? The other interesting thing is what happens with Mumbai next. I know it's a separate point, but really interested to see if this just flows over to everything now, or he gets back to Mumbai and goes, oh, I don't know, this team can't.
There is a world in which
something else.
He doesn't play for Mumbai again, right? That's also a possibility.
Oh. I'll be thinking about that for a while now.
Yeah. Anyway, one last thing that I want to talk about on overthrows, because there is nothing else to talk about, is the fact that quite a few catches were dropped this past week. Sri Lanka dropped two, but India, compared to them, were horrendous. They dropped around 4 to 5, and the results reflect that as well.
Yeah, I did a piece years ago, I'm trying to think if it was on, maybe it was on the old Substack, about specifically how when you drop a bunch of catches in a row or in a short space of time, how much it warps everything. And over time, you usually then go on a run where you start to take more catches, right?
Yeah.
And it was the Australia, it was when England toured Australia in that COVID series that they all pretend never existed, or whatever it is that Shuel Broad says about it, right? And I remember looking into it and being like, okay, I know Australia's a better team than England here. But if Australia didn't barely dropped a catch for a test and a half, and England dropped like 11, and you do wonder a little bit at a certain point of like, does that warp our perception? And because I follow basketball, I think it was when Serbia played USA the other day, they didn't hit a three-pointer, right? And then the next game they played South Sudan, they played better, But they also hit three-pointers. I think it was only one player, but he hit a bunch of three-pointers for them. And catches and three-pointers are one of those things that they warp the game so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to go on a run where you hit a bunch of three-pointers, and you're going to go on a run where you take a bunch of catches. And so I think sometimes you have poor teams in test series or in World Cups start really well just because they don't drop any catches for two or three games.
That's true.
Right?
Look at Australia, right? At the start of the ODI World Cup, they were dropping plenty, and then they didn't, and ultimately won it.
Yeah, and so this is a short sample period. What I usually look at catches is 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. right? If over two, and I remember there was a period where England were terrible, right? And they were, you know, one of the lower, you know, especially for a team that was, you know, ranked generally in the top 2 or 3, they were really, really low with catches. You're like, okay, that's a bad catching team and there's an issue there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in test cricket, it's probably related to the slips, right? And
yeah.
It's the same with T20 cricket. It's usually at boundary riders or whatever. And it can sometimes be dew related as well.
Also, I mean, one of those catches was dropped by Sanju Samson, who cannot buy a run at the moment as well. So it's been a troubling week for him, a troubling series overall.
Yeah, look, he just doesn't seem to get the international. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that he's an international quality player. Like I would rate him higher than Dawood Malan as a batter, right? And yet domestically, Sanju Samson looks like a far better player than Dawood Malan. And internationally, Dawood Malan looks like a far better player than Sanju Samson. It just hasn't quite worked for him at the moment, especially in the blue, right? I still think they're on the right path there, and I would back him. But he is going to end up being the sort of player that Indian fans just turn on very, very often, which is a shame because I think we know how talented he is. And he's probably a backup batter. The thing I really like about Sanju Samson is, and this probably quite similar in some way, well, actually, maybe not, but that kind of player that you can bat anywhere from 1 to 6, they're really good to have in a squad, especially if he has a second skill.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, he's going to remain a fringe player, unfortunately, with all the talent that's coming through in India. So I just hope that whenever he does get these opportunities, he, you know, plays a bit of a part as opposed to being on the wrong end of all of the criticism, I suppose. Anyway, that wraps up our itinerary for overthrows. Record time. Let's go to the Super Chats. We've got Path Right Winger, as always. He says, David Warner looks fitter than his age group of Rohit, Khawaja and Steve Smith. Does that mean a cricketer's career is limited by what intensity he has played with and not how much, how long or how old they are?
So now he's retired, I think. Oh, he's not quite retired, but I'm willing to give up a story that David Warner told me when we were with St. Lucia together, where he was playing in, he was hitting some balls in Guyana, some range hitting, and he hit a couple of balls that went a long way. And I was like, man, I haven't seen you hit the ball that far in a while. And he goes, yeah, my shoulder's stuffed. Doesn't matter how fit you are, if your shoulder doesn't allow you to do it, right? And it's shoulders, it's backs, it's knees, it's all these different things. You can be the fittest person in the world. So what a knee injury does is it doesn't allow your bat path to come straight, right? What a shoulder injury does is it doesn't allow you to play some of those forcing shots, especially in limited overs cricket, that can be a bit of a problem. You know, the hands, of course, you just get to a point where the ball just keeps hitting you on the fingers and they break. And every time it takes a little bit longer for the breaks to come back, which meant that you have to play with broken fingers. You know, your back just stiffens your movements. You can't move at the same pace. So when you're talking fitness, we're kind of talking different kinds of things there.
Yeah.
And, you know, there have been players there have been players who have been slightly overweight, but very batting fit. Well into their 30s and 40s. And Graham Gooch is Graham Gooch, Inzi, Arjuna Ranatunga would probably be three guys who played late into their 30s who are very batting fit. So they probably didn't have the problems of the knees or the hips or the shoulders or the hands, whatever it may be. Whereas you see someone like Mike Atherton who never carried any weight, right? Like I don't remember Athers ever having any weight. And yet by the time he was 30, 31, his back was gone.
Yep.
Right. Michael Clarke, another player who just as he finally worked out international batting, his back went. So the last couple of years, he made a lot of runs, but he didn't make them with the same freedom he had earlier on in his career. So what you're looking at is normal fitness.
Yeah.
And you're going, well, Rohit carries a little bit more weight and this player carries a little bit more weight. That's not quite the same. Batting, you know, we've talked about this a lot. You don't need to be Faf du Plessis to be a great batter. Right. There are lots of batters who have very different kinds of physiques. And as we go forward in cricket, I actually think the physiques will change even more, right? Especially, I think we'll see big baseball type slugging guys who are a little bit overweight who can just sit there and hit sixes all the time. And I also think that there is something to be said about the players who are larger, who have less footwork. Mm. Do you know what I mean? They have less moving parts and their head is always over the ball. All these sorts of things.
Also,
so I think what you're looking at, Parth, is genuine fitness, not batting fitness. This was made using MVPlay's analytics, pro-level stats, bringing detailed insights and tips to help you enhance your game.
Perhaps one of the reasons why Warner's super fit is because he is a fox between the wickets as well when he's running between them, right? So,
and that's part of his batting, right?
Absolutely.
Like that, it would make a lot more sense for him to be really good at that kind of that kind of fitness than it would for Inzi. Hmm. That wasn't part of his batting. Or
yeah.
Chris Gayle. Honestly, I think a lot of people thought Chris Gayle was lazy. There was a period between, I reckon, 2007 and 2011 where I watched a ton of Chris Gayle, you know, from West Indies and franchise leagues and everything. Every time I ever saw him try and take a quick single, it looked like his hamstring went. Hmm. Right? I think at a certain point, he's just like, this is not helping my batting at all.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go to the next super chat. Sri Charan asks, hi, don't you think cricket is missing out on betting analysis channel and blogs like they do with NFL and NBA? I can't find channels with analytics based on betting approach. Do you know any channels for this? I bet Jared does.
I do, because I work for one.
Yeah.
Cricket 8 is the one that you're looking for, Sri. We haven't done as much blogs recently, but up until recently, that was certainly a big part of what we did. The watch-alongs are probably the best things to do. Cricket is actually, there will be articles and videos on the Cricket 8 stuff for that. At the moment, we're doing more bloggy stuff in general, but there will be more betting and analysis stuff. But the watch-alongs are heaps. It's basically, if you like cricket analysis, whether it's betting or not betting, that Cricket 8 is probably the best place to watch a game. But it's a startup company, so it got a bunch of funds. It's got to a huge level, especially on Facebook and a lot of people on their website. Now they're putting some money into YouTube and podcasting and everything else because that's a little bit cheaper than the other stuff. And, you know, it's a cycle. So, you know, Cricket 8, sometimes we've got a lot of content. Sometimes we've got a little bit of content. But Rob Barron is a genius, and obviously Jake works for them as well. And there's a lot, you know, I have a ridiculous record of trading cricket, which Rob Barron will tell you is pure luck, and he's waiting for me to fail. In fact, I should have a bet with Rob on whether I fail or not. But you know, Bayram's been there when I've been trading, and seeing, you know, what I've gone in, what I put into it. Most of my betting stuff will probably be on Cricket 8 in the future, if you know that with our partnership. But we, you know, but you're right. That is the next big thing, and that's what Cricket 8 have worked out. It's just so tough in cricket to get funding for this because of India, because betting is not legal in India. And what you end up doing, what most people end up doing, is they do those crappy SEO articles, which both me and Bayram have had to write before, where you write these betting articles when you're not even an expert on betting half the time, and you're actually just trying to put SEO words in. The future is, though, I'm trying to think, there's the big one in America that that I follow for basketball, not that I do a lot of betting, but I find the analysis of the betting markets really interesting because they're looking, you know, for advantages. That's the future of cricket, and Cricket 8 is the company that I know of that's furthest down the line with that.
It could also be leveraged to kill off corruption within the game as well, because when you look at trends from, you know, betting sites, there's a lot of valuable data in there. And just a fun anecdote for people. Sure. Finish your thought.
No. You're right. I was just going to say, I don't think people understand that quite often when an illegal thing happens in cricket, it leaks over to the legal markets. Hmm. And there are companies that work for most cricket boards in the world that feed real-time information from markets to say, there's something going on in this game.
Yeah. Anyway, fun anecdote is that I was over at Jared's and there was this game going on between the Seattle Orcas and the San Francisco Unicorns. And the Unicorns had batted first and they'd scored tons in the power play. And then they kind of like completely tapered off towards the end. So we knew that it was the sort of wicket that gets difficult to bat on. And during the power play, I think Jared bet money. And then there was a point where Klaassen was batting towards the end. And we knew that it was either Klaassen or we win the money. Klaassen gets out. Jared is looking to hedge the bet. And I'm like, just let it be. We've won this.
Because Bayram is a better and I'm a trader. And I was like, I'd already made my victory in that one. But he was right. You know, I think there's, and that's the sort of thing that you're talking about, Sri, that I've got a bunch of stuff written. that eventually I will turn into some stuff. And also me and Rob will probably do a podcast. We might even get Bayram on and do a three-way podcast between the three of us through Cricket 8. Because Bayram wants to learn more about how all this, and he'll ask the right questions, whereas I probably know too much at the moment. But it's actually that you don't need to bet. And in fact, Cricket 8 are not going to be a bookie, right? As Cricket 8 are going to be an information place, right? But on Cricket 8, they will even have an app eventually that allows you to muck around and do free stuff without actually betting stuff, so you can learn about it. But through that, you learn other things about the game. And you really start to look at cricket a little bit differently. So I think it's a really interesting thing. Even if you don't want to spend any money on, there's a reason why I've been following, you know, basketball betting accounts and stuff. And I think I've put like 3 bets on basketball in the last couple of years. It's purely just because they're looking for things that normal basketball analytics is not.
All right. Next super chat. Rishabh Sharma says, can you name a weird player who was as dynamic as KP, Warney on the field, but boring as hell off the field as Quinton de Kock?
Ooh, so I think that's an interesting one. I've never felt Quinton de Kock was that boring off the field because I've heard a lot of inside stories about Quinton de Kock, and I think he might be accidentally entertaining, might be one way of putting him. I mean, would you put, I suppose Mike Hussey's not quite on that level. What about Lance Klusner?
Perhaps, yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know if Lance Klusner was like the most fun guy in the world, right?
Was he a big time sledger? Because he said Warney on the field.
Yeah, I don't think Quinton de Kock's a major sledger though, is he? Like, he says stuff occasionally. I remember a player saying to me once, when Quinton de Kock says something, you turn around, you look at his face, and you're like, you're not going to take it seriously, right? So I don't think of anyone who thinks of Quinton de Kock as a major sledger in the way that, you know, they might with other players like that. But yeah, if you're talking about players who are like, you know, players who are very, very exciting on the field doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be exciting off the field, because these are two very different things. And I think we often conflate them. And some players, like if you look at KP, I would say his whole life is lived in one particular way. And Warney is probably very, very similar. But there are many other very attacking players like Gilchrist. Isn't Gilchrist the perfect example of this? Of someone who played absolutely crazy, reckless cricket all the way through, and was, you know, let's be honest, king of the nerds off the field.
That's true. But then again, that's not boring to me. That's very entertaining.
That's why that's a hard question to answer. Yeah. Which we've answered it, Rishabh, so I'm hoping you have.
There is one more question up top, Jared, that you've missed. So if you
will save that for the next podcast.
Oh yeah, that makes sense actually. All right, so that pretty much wraps up Overthrows. Thank you to everyone who stayed with us over here, both in the comments, and to all the viewers and listeners who will be consuming this content. And just a quick reminder to everybody that you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of this team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. We'll be back next week with another episode of Overthrows. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bayram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.